This is audio about theme spirit attachment, partly possession of people and then the spirit releasement. Book Freeing the Captives, of Louise Ireland Frey. First a summary of some of her book, Freeing the Captives. Here is an overview of the specific methods and examples that Dr. Louise Ireland Frey presents in Freeing the Captives. The Spirit Releasement Therapy, SRT, process. Unlike traditional exorcism, which is often confrontational, Ireland Frey describes a methodology based on hypnosis and compassion. The process typically follows these steps. Detection: the therapist uses hypnosis to put the patient into a deep trance state. This involves looking for signs of attachments using techniques such as finger signaling, unconscious finger movements, or direct visual descriptions from the patient. Identification: the therapist communicates with the entity, often through the patient's own voice. The goal is to understand who the spirit is, why it is there, and whether it is even aware that it is dead. Education and conviction: many spirits are described as lost or confused. The therapist explains the situation and convinces the spirit that it has a better place to go, often described as the light. Release: with the help of what Ireland Frey calls spirit guides or beings of light, the entity is helped onward, so that both the patient and the spirit are free. Aftercare: the patient's energy field is cleansed and filled with healing energy to prevent new entities from attaching in the future. Examples from the book, case studies. The book contains hundreds of examples of how these attachments can affect health, physical pain. In one case, a woman named Anne suffered from chronic stomach pain that no doctors could explain. Under hypnosis, several spirits that had attached to her in childhood were identified. After these were released, the pain immediately disappeared. Personality changes: a patient named Clara discovered through spontaneous visualization that she was carrying two spirits, a young woman who died of a fever in the 19th century, and her own great-aunt who believed Clara's parents were incapable of caring for her. Mental health: Ireland Frey describes how depression, hearing voices, and unexplained lost time can often be traced back to external influences rather than traditional psychiatric disorders. Vertical bar: Dr. Ireland Frey divides the invisible influences into several categories in her book. Here is an overview of the most important types she describes. Earthbound spirits: this is the most common category. These are people who have died but for various reasons have not stepped into the light. This may be due to fear of punishment, confusion about their own death, or strong ties to people or places they have left behind. Dark forces: while the book focuses mostly on confused human spirits, she also acknowledges the existence of more negative or malevolent energies that deliberately seek to create fear or chaos. Thought forms: Ireland Frey suggests that intense, repetitive thoughts or emotions, such as extreme hatred or grief, can create a kind of independent energy that can affect others, even without an actual spirit involved. Subpersonalities: sometimes what appears to be an external spirit is actually a fragmented part of the patient's own psyche, often created by trauma. An important part of therapy is distinguishing between what is the patient's own mind and what is an alien entity. The book is written with a fascination for the unknown, but at the same time with a doctor's critical eye on what actually works for the patient. Here's a little more about both, as they are closely related in her work. How she got into this as a doctor: Louise Ireland Frey was originally a traditional school physician, MD. She began with hypnosis as a tool for pain relief and relaxation, Kesalt, but often experienced that her patients began to speak in other voices or described experiences that did not fit into conventional psychology. Instead of dismissing this as hallucinations, she began to explore the phenomenon methodically. She concluded that whether one believes in spirits literally or sees them as symbolic expressions of the subconscious, her liberation method led to patients' recovery when nothing else helped. Her advice for protection in the book: she suggests several simple techniques to avoid being affected by negative energies or attachments. Visualization of light: One of the most well-known techniques she describes is to imagine that one is surrounded by a bubble or a column of white, protective light that acts as a shield. Awareness and boundary setting, she emphasizes that fear and anger can make a person more vulnerable. By being aware of one's own boundaries and mentally saying no to foreign influences, one can strengthen one's own energy. Avoid drugs. Ireland Frey points out that alcohol and hard drugs can open gates in the aura or mental defenses, making it easier for earthbound spirits to make contact. Emotional hygiene. Since spirits are often attracted to similar emotions to your own, such as grief or bitterness, she believes that working on your own trauma and emotional health is the best long-term protection. In the book, Louise Ireland Frey is quite clear about why drugs and alcohol pose a risk in the context of what she calls spirit attachment. Here are the main points she highlights. Weakened psychic defenses. She describes the human energy field, or aura, as a protective barrier. Alcohol and drugs act as chemical holemakers in this defense. When intoxicated, one becomes more passive and loses conscious control of one's own mind, making it easier for an external entity to get in. Frequency match. Ireland Frey operates on the idea that like attracts like. A person who died while addicted to alcohol or drugs will often seek out places and people where these substances are still used. These spirits want to relive the intoxication through a living host. Loss of willpower. Since her method, spirit releasement therapy, is largely about the patient's own will to be master of their own house, the process becomes much more difficult if the patient's willpower is chemically numbed. The open door. She describes deep intoxication as an open door. In a state of blackout or extreme intoxication, the conscious personality is often absent, and the body is practically unguarded. This, according to her, is the most vulnerable moment for a permanent or temporary takeover by an alien energy. She emphasizes that this is not intended as a moral guideline, but as a medical and energetic observation on how best to preserve one's own integrity. Dr. Louise Ireland Frey gives a profound look in at how to distinguish between biological addiction and spiritual influence, as well as how to rebuild your energetic defenses. 1. The difference between real addiction and spiritual influence. As a physician, Ireland Frey acknowledges that addiction is a complex medical condition, but she points out that spiritual factors are often an overlooked component that can make recovery nearly impossible. Symptoms of spiritual influence. She suggests that if a person experiences sudden and uncharacteristic cravings for drugs, or feels like a passenger in their own body while they are taking drugs, it could be a sign of a connected entity, the parasite effect, an addict spirit. Often a person who died with an unresolved addiction acts like a parasite. It does not get the drug itself directly, but triggers the person's desire to experience the drug through the senses of the living host. When medical treatment fails, she observed that patients who did not respond to traditional addiction treatment often had dramatic breakthroughs when the appendage was removed through hypnosis. 2. Rebuilding the energetic defense. When a person has been using drugs over time, the book describes it as if the aura has become thin or perforated. Ireland Frey suggests several steps to fill these holes. Conscious intention, affirmations. The patient must actively declare ownership of their own body. This is often done in a hypnotic state by giving the inhabiting spirit a clear message that it is no longer welcome. Sealing the energy field. She recommends visualization techniques in which one strokes one's own energy field or imagines sealing cracks with golden or white light. This is intended to strengthen the psychic barrier against new influences. Integration of split parts. Substance abuse can cause parts of the personality to split off, dissociation. Ireland Frey uses methods to call these parts back, so that the patient becomes whole and thus less vulnerable to intruders. Environmental change. Since places where there is a lot of substance abuse often have a high concentration of earthbound spirits, she emphasizes the importance of avoiding such environments during the reconstruction phase to avoid reinfection. Here are the details on the two fascinating topics you wanted to cover. 1. Specific visualization techniques to seal holes. Dr. Ireland Frey uses visualization as an active tool in hypnosis to repair the patient's protections. She believes that thought has the power to shape energy, the cocoon. She teaches the patient to envision a luminous web or cocoon of pure white light that surrounds the entire body, from the bottom of the feet to the top of the head. This light acts as a filter. It lets love and positivity in, but blocks out foreign energies. Repairing cracks. The patient is asked to mentally scan their body for dark spots or holes, often in areas such as the solar plexus or the head. Then, they visualize pouring liquid gold light into these areas until they are completely sealed and strong. The mirror effect. For those who feel particularly vulnerable in social situations, for example, around people who are high on drugs, she suggests visualizing the outside of your energy field as being covered in mirrors pointing outward. Any negative energy will then be reflected back to its source without penetrating you. 2. Organ transfer and energy via transplants. This is one of the more controversial but interesting topics in the book. Ireland Frey discusses the concept of cellular memory and the energy associated with organs. Energetic residue. She argues that an organ, such as a heart or kidney, carries with it the energy or parts of the essence of the donor. With a transplant, the recipient can sometimes experience new preferences, memories, or emotional traits that belonged to the deceased. Involuntary attachment. In some cases, she believes that the donor's spirit can become stuck to its former organ in the new body, simply because it doesn't understand that it needs to let go. The solution, she recommends that in such cases, a gentle form of release be performed in which one thanks the organ and the donor, but at the same time makes it clear that the donor's spirit is now free to move on to the light, so that the recipient can fully own the organ on an energetic level. Here is a deeper explanation of Dr. Louise Ireland Frey's perspectives on death and the connection between body and mind, as she describes it in What Happens When We Die. Ireland Frey paints a picture of death as a transitional process that does not always go according to plan. She divides the dead into two main groups, those who enter the light. This is the normal process. Consciousness leaves the body and moves towards a state of peace, often assisted by guides or deceased relatives. The earthbound, this is the core of her work. She believes that many remain in our dimension because they are confused and do not realize that they have died, often through sudden death or accidents. They have an extreme fear of punishment or hell, and therefore dare not go towards the light. They feel a strong need to protect or monitor their loved ones. They have unresolved addictions, such as alcohol or drugs, and seek a living body to continue satisfying the need. The connection between mind and body. As a doctor, Ireland Frey sees the body as a house for consciousness. Her theory of illness is revolutionary in its context. The body as a receiver, she believes that many physical ailments, such as chronic pain, migraines or stomach problems, do not have a biological cause, but are echoes of an attached entity's own trauma. If the spirit that has attached itself dies from a chest injury, the patient may experience unexplained chest pain. Psychosomatic or external. She distinguishes between what we ourselves create with our thoughts, psychosomatics, and what is inflicted on us from outside. She believes that Western healthcare often misdiagnoses spirit attachment as schizophrenia or personality disorders. Health through ownership. For Ireland Frey, true health is when your own consciousness has 100% control over your own body and energy field. All noise from others, whether it be thoughts from the living or the presence of the dead, creates imbalance and illness. Her book is a call to view the human being as a multidimensional being in which the physical, mental and spiritual are inextricably linked. With the publishing of this volume on the subject of spirit releasement therapy, the author has taken an irrevocable step for a woman, and has undeniably moved humanity one giant step closer to a genuinely holistic model of mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual health and healing. Historically, the subjects of possession and exorcism were considered to be exclusively and securely confined within the obscure, secretive, and mysterious corridors of the Vatican underground, but that is not the beginning. Demons and devils were thought of as commonplace in Babylonia and Assyria. The first written accounts of the treatment of illness were deciphered from the cuneiform texts of Assyrian tablets dating from about 2500 BC. Eloquent incantations and prayers to the tribal gods were interspersed with direct challenges to the demons that imposed disease of every description. Through the long annals of human experience, many people have believed that there was a non-physical existence parallel and coexistent with the physical universe. People considered this world to be filled with spirits. The ancients believed that most sickness was caused by evil spirits. In ancient Egypt, the exorcism was performed by a team, a physician to cure the ailment and a priest to drive out the demon of disease. The early writings of the Chinese, Egyptians, Hebrews, and Greeks show that they generally attributed mental disorders to demons that had taken possession of an individual. In ancient Persia of the 6th century BC, the religious leader Zoroaster founded the religion that became known as Zoroastrianism. The god of light was named Ahura Mazda, the master of darkness was called Ahriman. Zoroaster, who was considered the first magician, was also an exorcist who used prayer, ritual, and the sprinkling of water to drive out the evil spirits. In India, the mother of Buddha was considered a great exorcist. King Solomon was perhaps the most noted of the Jewish exorcists. In the New Testament, fully one-fourth of the healings attributed to Jesus consisted of casting out unclean spirits. He specified more than one type of spirit. Developed over a long period of time, the Roman ritual continues as the model of exorcism in the Catholic Church. This concept of deliverance is based on the explicit command and example of Jesus to cast out devils, though the Church to this day fails to differentiate between demons, the minions of Lucifer, and the earthbound spirits of deceased humans. Hippocrates, 460-377 BC, the great Greek physician, has been called the father of modern medicine. He denied the possibility of intervention of deities and demons as the cause of disease. Further, he insisted that mental disorders stem from natural causes and, like other diseases, required more rational treatment. The physician Galen 130-200 AD, studied and described the anatomy of the nervous system. Among the causes of mental disorders he listed the following: injuries to the head, alcoholic excess, adolescence, fear, shock, menstrual changes, economic reverses, and disappointment in love. With Galen's death, the contributions of Hippocrates and later Greek and Roman physicians were lost in a resurgence of popular superstition. There was a return of the belief in demonology as the source of illness. Not until the 16th century did another prominent physician, Paracelsus 1490-1541, reject demonology as the cause of abnormal behavior. He defied the medical and theological traditions of his time, for which he was hounded and persecuted until his death. In the face of this ongoing dissent, demonology lost ground. Reason and the scientific method gradually led to the development of modern clinical approaches to mental illness. Even so, the belief in demonology was still widespread. Mental illness and demonology, the study of spirit possession, have been inseparably linked through the tortuous course of history. Modern spiritualism began in America in 1837 in Mount Lebanon, with communications received from spirits. Spiritualism is concerned with two basic premises: the continuity of personality after death and the powers of communication with the spirits of the deceased. The early work on spiritualism was conducted with trance mediums, people who apparently have the ability to make contact with the spirit world in an attempt to communicate with the spirits of deceased persons. Mediumship is defined as the phenomenon in which a non-physical intelligence, usually a discarnate human, assumes some degree of temporary control or possession of a physical body in order to communicate something useful and meaningful. Mediumship is distinguished from the phenomenon of spirit possession in that it occurs only with the deliberate cooperation of the medium and produces a constructive result. The difference is in purpose, duration, and effect. James Hislop, 1854-1920, was professor of logic and ethics at Columbia University, New York, from 1889 to 1902. He authored a book on psychology in 1895, and taught the subject at Smith College when the science was in its infancy. Dr. Hislop was an experimentalist and empiricist. After he admitted the credibility of the existence of spirits, it required 10 years of investigation to convince himself of the possibility of obsession by discarnate beings as a cause of mental illness. In the years that followed, he accumulated the facts that make it scientifically probable. He is the true pioneer in the systematic investigation of spirit obsession and possession as a cause of mental disorder. Dr. Carl Wicklund was an avowed spiritualist. He was also an exorcist. Wicklund graduated from Durham Medical College in 1900 and 9 years later became chief psychiatrist at the National Psychopathic Institute in Chicago. In 1918 he moved to Los Angeles and established the National Psychological Institute where he continued the work of healing spirit obsession. His seminal work in the treatment of spirit obsession and possession is chronicled in his two books, 30 Years Among the Dead, 1924, and Gateway to Understanding, 1934. Dr. Wicklund first became interested in spirit possession after observing the frequency with which people suffered character changes after engaging in such practices as using the Ouija board or automatic writing. Many such people required hospitalization for apparent mental illness. Wicklund consulted discarnate intelligences through his wife, Anna, who was an excellent and gifted medium. He was told that possession of the living by the earthbound spirits of deceased humans was the cause, and that he could alleviate the symptoms of the victims if he followed their instructions. The work was conducted with the help of a concentration circle, a small group of people assembled to support this rescue work. It is such rescue work that is described in later chapters in this book, Into This Centuries Old Unresolved, and I suspect unresolvable, dispute between the intellectual forces that eventually fostered the mechanistic, reductionist Newtonian-Cartesian model of material reality and those individuals who perceive and believe in the higher, broader dimensions of a vaster spiritual universe of universes. Stepped Louise Ireland Frey, M.D. Working as a hypnotherapist in the later years of her medical career, she was, by wonderful synchronicity, called into the field of spirit releasement rather by surprise. More people heard of her successful work, and more cases came her way, as often happens in the non-local reality where spirit releasement is not only possible, but constitutes the triage procedures of spiritual healing. This is the first step before other healing treatment can be intelligently applied. Otherwise, it cannot be known just whose ailment is being treated. It was my privilege to meet Louise in 1985 at the Spring Conference of the Association for Past Life Research and Therapy, during a brief introductory workshop on clinical depossession, which is the term I still used at the time. Did she volunteer or did I call on her as my demonstration subject? I don't recall, but it was another timely synchronicity for us both. It boosted her along her path of learning, and I was gifted with a new colleague, a medical doctor at that, in this arena, which, as many of my associates were quick to point out, was very weird. Courage is not the only requirement for a person to follow the path Louise has accepted and welcomed as her own. It requires perseverance with the work, precision in collecting data and case histories, documenting the near-miraculous results with the unbiased observation that marks the scientific investigator. In this unproven therapeutic modality, the therapist is operating in the unseen realms, square inches the face of ridicule and rejection by family, friends, and professional associates. By their fruits shall they be known. The fragrant blossoms have emerged, the fruit has ripened, and it is good. This is a book about Dr. Louise Ireland Frey's adventure into an unknown land. She has returned and has chronicled an exciting journey. And now the pleasure of reading it is yours. William J. Baldwin, PhD, author of Spirit Releasement Therap. These things are mine, these things are mine. Good. We laughed. Now, look, see if your mother is still there. Amy reported that her mother was gone. Good. And she will remain gone unless you call her back, and then she will come as a memory only, a pleasant memory. You are free, you are yourself. Yes, she will never bother you again, agreed Johnny. Is there anything you want to ask about before you return to normal awareness? I inquired. Amy opened her eyes and stared at the ceiling, still in hypnosis. Was she really here? Or did I just imagine it? Does it matter, so long as she's gone? I asked. It doesn't matter, so long as she's gone. And she'll stay away. Finished Johnny. There was not much more to this session. After bringing her back to normal consciousness, I asked how she felt, better relieved. I was thinking about Mother's diamonds. I'll have them reset. They're mine, I can do what I want with them. Johnny and I laughed again for her. I feel fine. I feel wonderful, ended Amy. Several weeks later, I saw her in the grocery store. I'm okay. My mother is still the sometimes, a very small figure, and she never bothers me. I'm myself again. A year later, Amy told me that she did not see her mother anymore. She was happy, even though dealing with several domestic and financial problems. She felt strong. As I said, this was my first attempt at what some have called depossession in the clinical setting. Neither Johnny nor I knew how to help the deceased mother. We simply sent her out and away, perhaps to continue just a looking for a home in some other woman, especially one who had things that might attract her. Maggie was not an unclean spirit nor evil in any sense, not even malicious. She was just selfish and uncaring, insensitive in death as in life. Later, alone with Johnny, I looked at her and grinned, "Say, are we exorcists?" In the months following this first amateurish releasement, a number of similar cases came to me. One of the first was by an odd chain of circumstances that once more took me by surprise. I received a phone call from a lady who was concerned about her daughter, Marta. She said that Marta had been with high school friends when one of them suggested that they go to her home for a séance. Not knowing what was meant, Marta agreed, expecting some sort of teenaged fun. She described to her mother the circle of young people around a table, candles, salt, etc., and then chanting by the group. After a while, the girl leader had Marta change her place and sit beside her, after which the chanting began again. Suddenly Marta said she began chattering, just gibberish, and could not control what was coming out of her mouth. The other young people stopped their chanting, and then from Marta's mouth came clear words, "Tell Lorna Jasek that there is going to be a car accident, but she will not be killed." There was a pause, and then the message was repeated urgently, "Tell Lorna Jasek, but she is not to be afraid, she will not be killed." Marta leapt from her chair and ran outside into the garden, crying. She insisted she had to go home at once. It was shortly after this that her worried mother phoned me, a second choice to the psychic friend she had been unable to reach. When I am faced by a situation that calls for more wisdom than I possess, I always send an urgent request into the higher regions for whatever wisdom and power may be needed to alleviate the situation. I did this during the time that Marta and her mother were driving to my home. By the time they arrived, Marta was self-controlled but nervous. I explained that I wanted her to go into hypnosis and let me call back the voice that had spoken through her, but I assured her that I would not ask her to channel it again. I assured her that there would be no danger to her and that her mother would stay right with her. Then I induced Marta into a light hypnosis. "I am calling the one who used Marta's voice without asking her permission. You had no right to push into her mind like that and frighten her. I ask you to stay out of her from now on." I did not ask any questions. I just sent the voice away. When Marta was back to full consciousness, she said she felt clearly that the owner of the voice had been very sorry for having frightened her and had sent feelings of deep regret before withdrawing. Marta herself seemed to be greatly relieved.